Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Gentle Parents Unite podcast. Glad to be here with you for another week. And I'm here with my colleague and my friend, Sujai Johnston. Hi, Sujai. How are you?
Hi, Vivek. I'm wonderful today. How are you?
Good, good. I love doing this podcast with you every week. We always go into a lot of depth around things that really help parents have better relationships with their kids and with themselves and with others, too, because it's really a holistic thing that we teach. It affects all of our relationships, really.
Yeah, and that relationship with self is very primary. I love doing this podcast with you. It's the highlight of my week every week. And I guess we've slagged off doing the weekly a little bit lately. We might need to get right back around.
Yeah, get back into a more routine.
Absolutely. We're going to talk today a little bit about this concept of this internet diagnosis that you hear get thrown around really like flippantly, as you know, anyone and everybody and their grandmother and their brother and their sister who don't have healthy relational tools and engage in unhealthier or toxic types of patterns suffer from narcissism. You know, I think it's an interesting topic to dig into. I want to start by saying that narcissism is, it's a medical diagnosis, and there's no way that everybody in the world is struggling with this medical diagnosis. And throwing it around kind of flippantly and lighthearted internet diagnosing everybody, narcissism is quite harmful in a lot of ways. But I kind of wanted to dig into this topic a little bit and peel some of the layers off of it, because I think that there are some interesting points that are being brought to the table. You know, narcissism is an inability to feel empathy for other people and a very self-centered type of a thing. So there's actually like 9 main points that would, you know, somebody would receive this diagnosis if they espoused, I think it's 5 or more of these certain points that they look for to see if they actually, if they are diagnosed with narcissism.
Is that like in the psychiatric manual or something like that?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So a lot of people might experience or have an experience with somebody that has maybe shows a lot of these different traits. And there's a reason that everybody keeps talking about narcissism as this big thing that's this widespread problem, right? And particularly because we're looking at some of the things that underlie the specific diagnosis and seeing a big deficit in some of those things in our society, things like empathy and you know, healthy relational tools and being able to communicate with people in positive ways and have strong, healthy relationships that aren't based on a lot of deflecting and lack of accountability, displaced blame, and all of these other not very healthy relational tools, rather toxic relational tools, right? And we're seeing this widespread lack of empathy and a lot of these other unhealthy relational tools that go with it. And that's kind of why people are tagging this label onto things, which, you know, the label I don't find helpful. But what lays underneath it and learning about what's laying underneath it and being able to address the problem is really huge, because, you know, these things, these relational tools or traits that somebody might exhibit that would be within this, a lot of them could be learned relational tools, you know, and a lot of them are learned relational tools. A lot of it comes from the society that we're living in, the way that we interact with children, the way that the patriarchal system is set up. There's a lot of, you know, the breeding of entitlement and the way that capitalism plays into the lack of empathy and accountability and all of that other stuff and all of the good news, I think, is that if we really pay attention to the way that we're raising children, and when we see these things come up, instead of, you know, labeling it so much as, you know, we want to put it underneath a medical diagnosis and label it and call it a name, but see the ways that we can make shifts in this deficit.
Sujai, I just want to clarify something with you. When you say make up for that deficit, you mean the deficit in the underlying emotional and systemic causes that create a lot of unhealthy relational dynamics and relationships with our emotions and stuff like that. Is that right?
Absolutely what I'm talking about. Yes. Thank you for clarifying that.
Good. I wanted to make sure I was hearing correctly.
Yeah. You know, all of these things that people are pointing out that they're coming into contact with, you know, and they're saying, hey, this is, you know, narcissism. Oh, I'm saying the label may or may not be very helpful. If that many people fall under the exact diagnosis, right? But they're coming into contact with specific relational tools that are very unhealthy. They're coming into contact with, you know, people being not in contact with their own emotions, projecting their emotions, and a lot of lack of empathy. And that's why they're coming up with this big overall broad internet diagnosis. But if we look at those underlying things, I think that there's a lot of healing that we can do. You know, I'm not saying that in our adult relationships, if we're dealing with somebody who has a lot of really difficult relational traits and unhealthy relational tools, that we should continue to engage in them and hope that they're going to get better. But there are a lot of ways that we can engage with our children to teach our children how to engage with the world with empathy, how to be supportive of other people, how to engage in healthy relational tools, how to take personal accountability, and really engage in the ways. And really, it all leads back into the work that we're doing here, right? It's all about healing our own relational and emotional traumas, taking accountability for the ways that we interact with other people, and really putting our relationships in the forefront of our life, teaching our children how to really live their lives with values and empathy and be in touch with their emotions. And I think this is a really big thing. And that was the point that I was going into, actually, was that, you know, a lot more men are diagnosed with narcissistic personality disorder than women. And, you know, in my reading, they were saying they weren't really sure of the reason for that. And I personally would make a very educated guess that the reason for that is because we as a society are so disconnected from emotion. And there's a further layer. Women have a certain amount of acceptability where we're allowed to feel some emotion, but there's a whole other layer for men around feeling emotion, where really the only two emotions that they're allowed to feel are like happiness and anger. You know, even love is a weakness. Even, you know, their sorrow and all of these other things, they're seen as weaknesses. And so it's really hard.
Yeah, and I wanna say that that's like equal parts, you know, patriarchy, misogyny, and homophobia.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The homophobic aspect of that doesn't get talked about as much as the as other aspects, and I think that's a big one for the way that we're raised. Unfortunately, there's you know, there's a lot of rage and prejudice around that. Yeah, and I love the idea of a mask. One of my one-liners is, we are not mask designers, or parents are not mask designers. And, you know, that's one of the things when you're talking about you know, teaching empathy, inspiring empathy in our kids and that kind of thing, and the deep values and the deep relational tools. So often we struggle with how to do that, and we fall back on coercive techniques because it's just what we know. Because we think we've got to stop them from being entitled. We've got to stop them from being, you know, bad people. And so then we end up like saying, well, kids have to get forced this way. They have to do this. And you hear that kind of talk a lot. And it's
I'm glad you mentioned that badness and the sense of wrongness, because I think that that really plays into some of the deflecting that people do. Because, you know, I talk about how as humans we're pack animals, and we have we could be part of the community, and it's really hard to take accountability and not try to displace blame and engage in some of these less than healthy relational tools. If you feel like admitting to or taking accountability for is going to make you a bad person, and then you no longer have this place within the community. When dealing with our children, removing that sense of badness and wrongness is really one of the most powerful things we can do. And a lot of people will fight that. They're like,
yeah,
there's no way our kids can learn the difference between right and wrong if we don't teach them or show them the difference between right and wrong.
Exactly. And
I think that that's really untrue, especially, you know, I'm a person who lives true to my values. And sometimes my values, you know, they contradict what other people might say is good or bad. And I'm looking at certain things and going, well, you know, I can see that these people think that they're on the, you know, one good example of that might be that, you know, the police seem to think that they're on the side of the good, and I'm seeing them killing a lot of innocent black men. Not very comfortable with that. So in my values, you know, I'm looking at the difference between right and wrong and weighing it against my values and not against what, you know, what I'm seeing with my own eyes, as opposed to what I'm being told that, you know, it's right that the police are keeping law and order or some other crock of BS. And, you know, when we can look at things like that and go, the line between right and wrong and who's the good guy and who's the bad guy can get pretty hazy when we're looking at things that way. And so weighing it against our values and what makes us feel most comfortable can be quite helpful. You know, for me, it helps me see, you know, that the police shouldn't be murdering people.
Right.
You know, assigning badness and wrongness to certain things and not to other things. And, you know, I think kids can sort this out if they have a strong value system and they're really able to see the world clearly, and we help them to be critical thinkers.
Yeah, I have what I call the self-reflective questions. And it's just a few questions, but you can build on it, of course. But it's the kind of questions to ask kids and to ask yourself so that you're thinking about these kind of things, exactly what you're talking about. And I say, like, some of the questions are, who do you think you are? Not who do you think you are, but like, who are you? What kind of person do you want to be? What kind of relationships do you want? What kind of quality of life do you want? What kind of world do you want to live in? And what kind of world do you want to contribute to? And so asking those kind of questions, what do you think is important in relationships? What do you think is important in people working together? And you can ask these kind of questions where there's no predetermined answer. It's not like you come in saying, like, you know what the right answer is. And if your kid answers different, they're wrong. It's about really listening to their ideas and validating them so that what they're learning to do in that case, when you ask those kind of questions, is not so much learning the actual topic at that moment, so much as learning to think, learning to process. And you can guide them that way without any force, because then you're just thinking together.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, you've talked about before, Vivek, how kids have a really built-in sense of justice. Say it all the time. It's not fair. We systematically kind of beat that out of them. Well, life isn't fair, little one, you know. I think that it's a wonderful thing always to lean into it. You know, when a child says it isn't fair, trying to find a way to make it fair is probably a really great thing. Or it might be, you know, that moment when they realize that something really isn't fair. It might be the moment that an activist is born, and that's a beautiful thing too. You know, instead of teaching them that life isn't fair in that moment, we do have a choice to teach them that, yeah, life isn't fair. And sometimes there's not much we can do about it, but sometimes there is. What can we do? And, you know, can build a lot of lifelong passion in that moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, it's true. My daughter, just the other day, my daughter was telling this story about something she did. And I said, "Wow, that's really great thinking, kiddo. I really like the way you handled that." And she said, "Well, you know, I learned it from you." I said, "Really? You learned it from me?" And I was just impressed with her, right? She goes, "Yeah." And my kid's going to be 24 in less than a month, for context. She said, "Yeah, I learned this from you. A number of years ago, you told me the story where you were at a festival or something, and you were sitting with a group of people, and one of the people was the manager of the festival, and there were some health inspectors that were coming to inspect the place that afternoon, and she was really upset. She was really scared that they weren't going to pass their inspection because there were so many people around, because they usually don't come during the festivals. They come in between after they have a chance to clean." And so she was stressing about this, and all of a sudden she said, "I hope that the inspector gets into a car crash on the way here, and so they can't make it." And I butt in immediately, and I said, "I didn't say that's not nice. I didn't say that's not how you should talk. I didn't say why would you wish something bad on someone? That's pretty mean. I didn't say anything like that. I wouldn't say how would you feel if somebody did that to you. I didn't say anything like that. What I did was I went, hey, you know what I do when I don't want someone coming to like an appointment or something, and I want them to like miss it or something. What I do is I think, imagine that this person just fell in love with the person of their dreams, and they just got offered their dream job on the other side of the country, and everything is falling into place in their lives, and they're so happy, and they got the call on the way here, and they turn around immediately and they quit their job, and that's why they didn't come. You still get what you want because you get that they didn't come, and they get a dream job, and, you know, dream partner, and they're very happy with the rest of their life." And my kid said, I told her that story when I came back from that festival, because that is what actually happened. It was a beautiful moment. Everybody's like face lit up, and we were all kind of, there was like this glow of like, yeah, we can think that way. Sure, we can think that way. And she never forgot that story. You know, in years later, she says that it still informs her, because you know, I always taught values. One of the main ways that I taught my kid values was through story, real story. You know, real story and fables and mythologies, and having a real personal connection with no judgment, just sharing, this is what happened to me, and this is the joy that I got from it, and let her absorb that into her own system. She always has taken that in because the force was never there, the expectation was never there. And that allowed her to like take in that stuff freely and make it her own.
What a beautiful story.
I love that story. It's such a good story.
And I think to myself, what if you're so mad
Right,
at
right, right. Well, if you actually want someone to suffer, that's a whole different situation.
them? That is a whole different situation.
Goodness. Sometimes when a friend tells me about someone who's like upset them or hurt them or something, my brain immediately goes into like find 50 ways to like destroy the life of that other person. I'm like, yeah, that's my friend. Let's see how you like it. And then I'm plotting all these things.
Luckily, we don't lack out on the plots, right? And the thought
Exactly.
that, you know, again,
That's
let's not
exactly it.
mess or badness. No assigning badness. Sometimes, you know, we do tend to like, we'll have a thought like that where, you know, oh, somebody hurt my friend. I want to protect my friend. And then we think that, you know, we have this thought that's incredibly, and we go, wow, I'm a bad person for thinking it. But it's okay to think it. It's the acting on it that, you know, we
That's
need to
right.
work on sometimes.
That's exactly it.
You know, and a lot of people might ask how we would teach empathy. And I think that one of the most powerful ways that we can teach empathy is simply by showing it, by really trying to empathize and understand where they're at and where they're
coming.
To be supportive when our children are having emotional fallout, when they're melting down, when they're crying, being present for them and helping them through that, being understanding of their feelings. All of that helps them to learn about those feelings and those emotions. And, you know, I'm definitely going to venture to say that this whole large overall feeling that there's a giant narcissism pandemic going on in our world right now. I'd really like to venture to say that so much of it has to do with this really learning the emotional stuff, really getting to understand our emotions and what they've come to tell us and how to make adjustments for our emotions so that we're not living on the edge of explosion and aggression and feeling like we're constantly on the bad of, on the side of, you know, being the bad outcast and being able to carry ourselves in better ways. And then
can you imagine, I just wanted to say, can you imagine if the leaders of our world had that kind of emotional relationship with their emotions, had that kind of emotional understanding?
It would be absolutely beautiful.
I
would absolutely love that. And, you know, I'd really like to see more focus on emotional understanding and emotional awareness and emotional growth in our educational system, because it's incredibly important and it's a lifelong skill that helps people to engage in healthier relationships, both at home and in the workplace.
Yeah.
You know, I think the rest of the rest of the piece that really stands out to me is undesirable traits that people are exhibiting, the, you know, poor communication and the deflecting, the lack of accountability, displaced blame, self-centering, you know, all of these things. People are trying to out there trying to get needs met. And these are taught and learned relational tools that have helped them in the past to get needs met. And what we really, as a society, I would hope that we could focus on, but definitely within, you know, our spaces here in Gentle Parents Unite, what we really focus on is learning what are the healthy relational tools, you know, the communicational skills, the learning to, you know, be accountable and to feel comfortable with accountability and learning how to engage in the healing processes with our loved ones, letting go of our toxicity, letting go of any of our, you know, harmful learned relational patterns and some of the things that we might have been engaging in ourselves that weren't, you know, the healthiest patterns, because we were all raised in this society and we were taught to love by the people who raised us. And a lot of them might not have really known how to do that quite, you know, in the best of ways. And we all have quite a bit of unlearning within ourselves of a lot of these less than healthy relational tools, you know. I think we can, if we're being honest with ourselves, we'll find that we have quite a few places where we need to grow and improve on a lot of these skills ourselves, because they're not given to us, they're not taught, and we're learning from a lot of people who might have been stunted in these areas as well, because we're coming from a society that doesn't really value these skills as much as they value the, you know, academic set of skills. We got so focused on teaching the, you know, academic skills, the reading, writing, and arithmetic, that we forgot the human relational skills of communication and all of the other stuff that lies under us being able to interact with each other in healthy relationships and have healthy relationships with each other.
And, yeah, you know, one.
Oh, go ahead.
Thanks. One of my one-liners is update your survival mechanism.
I love that one.
Yeah, I love it too, because in a lot of ways what it does is it can take away a lot of the shame for the behavior patterns that we have and simultaneously give us responsibility for them. And I think that whole combination of responsibility without shame is where there's real power, you know. A lot of the time people shy from the idea, when you say accountability, it's like the scary word.
Right.
Yeah. No, it just means I did what I
pin you down. And if you don't comply, you'll be canceled. But
yeah, you'll be canceled. Just like Mr. Potato Head. Yeah.
Right.
And really that's not the case. Right. So when we say accountability, you know, real deep accountability. And I'm talking about accountability that isn't for show, but it actually mends relationships, actually allows you to continue on in a relationship and get deeper. I'm talking about accountability that actually has an effect, not just because you feel guilty and sad or they're angry and you have to appease them. That kind of accountability, it has medium effectiveness. But accountability where you don't feel shame and blame, but you can look straight in the eye of what you did and say, yeah, I did this. I can see why I did this. I'm going to learn from it. I'm going to move closer towards, like you were saying, closer towards my value system, recognizing when I was not in my value system. And that kind of thing has great power in it. You know, that kind of thing has great. And to teach our kids that, it means it has to be safe for them to do that self-reflection. As soon as them, just jumping on what you said before, as soon as we bring wrongness into it, it's no longer safe for them to do that reflection. They can't do it. They have to protect themselves. And then they get. Then they get the inner stuff that I was talking about, the fear and the anger and the different shields that they put up to protect that, because we put all that wrongness on them. But if we want them to really self-reflect, we need to make it safe. Not only safe. Safe is still kind of safe means not dangerous. You're not going to die. That's what safe means. But I mean, it has to be palatable for them. It has to feel good to them to self-reflect. They have to be like, oh, self-reflection is a great thing. It helps me be a better person and enjoy my life more and enjoy my relationships more. It has to feel good. It has to feel like this is what I would want to do. It's not like you should self-reflect, you know, you should think, go to your room and think about what you've done. It's like, what? That is never in the world ever as that helps, right? But hey, let's think together about life is a whole different thing.
I could not agree more. Absolutely. And, you know, I think personal accountability, it really comes from our own sense of wanting to do better in our relationships, which is different than somebody else wanting us to do better in our relationships.
Yeah, it's what I call, for kids especially, it's what I call WIFM. And WIFM is what's in it for me. WIIFM, WIFM.
Right.
And it really, you know, again, it's when kids understand how it's meeting their certain things we're asking or suggesting, you know, when it's meeting their needs, when they really understand why it's meeting their needs, and they understand and believe that we have those needs that we have their best interest at heart. We're trying to help them meet those needs, because most of the time guidance from adults just feels like a drag to kids, right? It doesn't feel empowering. It doesn't feel like, oh yeah, this is a person I would want to follow more often. Yeah, that's not what we inspire in kids most of the time, right? So this is where when I work with kids and when I start to interact with kids, I want them to feel like my guidance is something that makes a lot of sense. And then when I talk about relationship and relationship tools and communication, they're not feeling a sense of wrongness. They're like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. I would like to communicate that way. You know, it's such a different way to approach the kind of guidance.
Right. Absolutely. You know, and I've been recognizing a lot how, you know, a lot of the things we see, it's not... You know, and again, when we assign that sense of wrongness and badness to things, it's not about good and bad. It's just about different relational tools that people use to get their needs met that they were taught and learned throughout a lifetime. And, you know, at some point, those different tools may have been very useful to them at some point when they were a small child or when they were in a really bad situation. Tools like displacing blame or shutting down or things like that could have been things that actually kept you safe from abuse or, you know, kept you alive in a really scary situation and things like that. So brings us back to the update your survival mechanisms as well, because some of those things might have been useful in a certain situation and may not be as useful to you as they were when you learned them. And generally speaking, these things are definitely learned behaviors, in my opinion. Yeah. And we can learn them and we can choose not to teach them. I think when we're dealing with adults that are incredibly wounded and have a lot of difficult relational tools that, you know, can come out in abusive ways, to be quite frank about it, it's not quite the same. There's certainly, I don't want to say we have to, but it's not quite the same as dealing with our children. And a lot of times, you know, people need to, of their own course, do their own work. And if they're not going to, then, you know, boundaries, boundaries, boundaries. And sometimes some relationships we just can't fix. And when I'm talking about adult relationships and things like that, I always want to be really clear about that, because when we're trying to, when we're going through our adult relationships, it's really important that the adults in the relationship are reciprocating of the work that we're doing and that they're doing the work as well to heal the relationship. If it's not being reciprocated, then I always recommend boundaries and more boundaries and see where those boundaries lead to. But I just like to be really clear about that, because we can do a lot of work with our children and we can teach our children new relational tools, and we can with adults as well. But sometimes we need a little bit more space in those relationships in order to keep ourselves safe.
And I think it's that mutuality that you were talking about that really hit the nail on the head for me, you know. And that's another thing, that bringing up kids with a gentle parenting mindset, that's another thing that it helps with, is that mutuality, because we do our best to offer them that sense of, you know, that sense of being on the same level as us, being on the same playing field as us, that we're equals and we are working together on this whole thing called life. And it's so different from when kids have an experience where they are more in the subservient role, you know, their parents have power over them and make the decisions and the control and everything. And then that's what they learn, really. That's what they learn about life. And that's what they learn about how relationships should be. It's a whole different thing when we interact with them from a place of, you know, horizontal power sharing rather than hierarchical power.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Ooh, that was great talking about that with you today, Sujai.
Yeah, I get a little bit on the soapbox about the topic because I feel underlying of this broad narcissism diagnosis really is this lack of emotional understanding that we have in society, followed up by really poor relational tools. And these things are things that we can address and we can change in the generations moving forward simply by teaching empathy and healthy relational tools. And so I get kind of on a soapbox about it because I really want to look at this underlying stuff and try and, you know, as the work we're doing here, do some healing to society at large through getting this emotional understanding and awareness out there to the people and teaching empathy and, of course, these healthy relational tools, which is a great time to drop a plug for our wonderful sites. We're Gentle Parents Unite. Just about anywhere. You can find us on Facebook and you can find us on Instagram and just about every social media platform. And we are also have our subscription site where we do a lot of deeper work with people. It's our support service, and we really get into helping you work on yourself so that you can be the parent and the person that you want to be. And we really love supporting people out there. So we look forward to seeing you over at gentleparentsunite.com/membership and getting on some calls with you and working with you deeper on a personal level.
That's a really great space. Everybody there is really dedicated to working on their and deepening their gentle parenting work, you know, their interactions with their kids and learning about how to use empathy and learning about how to connect with their kid and have real collaborative discussions where you can really work things out together. It's a great space for doing that kind of work and thinking about those kind of things together. So yeah, I appreciate being part of that community and that the way you and I have kind of nurtured it over the years, and it's a really beautiful space.
Yes, it is. I love it. And I love you.
thank you. That's a good segue to what I want to say is if you also want to read my articles and see some of my videos, I have a lot of videos. I have probably about 60 at this point, at least hour long videos in the membership space just for members. So you should, that's one good reason to join too. Another good reason, other than the live events, like Sujai and I both do coaching calls and stuff. And so there's a lot of really great live events that happen every week. But if you want to read my articles and see my videos, I have about 70 videos on YouTube at Meaningful Ideas, and also Facebook. I have a whole bunch of articles, Meaningful Ideas, on Facebook. So you can also check me out. And that's it, everybody. Have a great week. We will see you next time. We appreciate you, and keep on doing what you're doing. You're making a difference. All right. Bye, everyone.